to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. It's time for the second half of the Am and Bundy talk here on the Cultural Hall, right? It's episode 137, part two. Hopefully you've listened to part one, because we didn't do much to set the ground again. We just kind of kept talking, and we talked for so long that I was like, we're going to have to make two episodes about this. So if you are now picking this up and you're going, it's part two, you're going to need to go back and listen to part one so you hear everything that's gone on up to this point, and then listen. Remember, looking for your mission stories, richie@theculturalhall.com. They can be any type of stories. That's how I knew the church was true. This was the thing that was frustrating. This was so hilarious. This was a prank that was pulled. This was a thing I didn't get, etc., etc. Whatever they are, send me your mission stories, richie@theculturalhall.com. You can also find us on Pinterest, find us on Instagram, find us on Facebook and at Twitter. It's all at The Cultural Hall on all of those things. And what else am I missing? Oh, yeah, you know, get the Mormon News Report. It gets a daily email that gets sent to you and a weekly little bit of audio that's going to start happening here pretty quick where you can get the best in news. It's Mormon news, anything that has to do with the Mormon church, right? Anything. There's 70s that follow the Mormon News Report. So, you know, if a 70 does it, would you do it? Check that out, Mormon News Report. All right, let's do the second and third block. It's Ammon Bundy, son of Cliven Bundy, the Nevada rancher, the big standoff thing. It gets juicy here in the second part. It is episode 137, part two of The Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
I was actually this whole time cooking meals. I was cooking, you know,
taking breakfast. Care of the couple hundred.
Yeah, exactly. I was cooking lunch, and I was getting ready to do lunch, and so I didn't even join them. I mean, when they were driving by, the people were protesting, and you know, so I thought, well, they'll go down there and they'll protest, and then they'll be back in just a few minutes, you know. So anyway, they go down there. Convoy takes quite a long time because they're going really slow. I mean, it's a pretty big convoy, and they've got this heavy equipment that's bouncing down all these dirt roads. And they finally get to the road, and the first vehicles start to get to the road, and they're raising their sign. I'm still up there. You know, I could see them. They're about a quarter of a mile down the valley. And I'm up there, and I could see that the vehicles were coming, and then that the agents started getting out of their vehicles. The federal agents started getting out of the vehicles.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, man, I better go down there and see what's going on. So I actually took my four-wheeler down there, and then I kind of went around and back, and because I wanted to see what was in the back of that dump truck. I thought, well, I get the chance, because it's still moving down. So I got up on the hill, and I couldn't see what was in the back of it, and I could see there's starting to commotion going on down there. So anyway, about the time that the dump truck just about gets to the road, I come down, so I'm behind them, and I guess they didn't know I was up there. I come down, and I actually park and put my four-wheeler in park right in front of the dump truck, so that the dump truck, well, actually hit my four-wheeler. I was parked and everything, but hit my four-wheeler, and then he stops. And so, and all these agents by this time are all out of their vehicle. They're basically citing this code, which is means you can't protest.
Go over to the orange fence.
You have to go 3-4 miles away into this little fence where no one can see you or hear you and express your First Amendment. And so that's why they got out of their vehicle, to enforce that code. And well, when I got out, I just immediately joined the protesters and started, you know, saying, you guys, you know, get out of here, get out of our state. You don't have authority to be here. You know, what are you doing with a backhoe? What are you on our mountains with a backhoe? And I honestly thought that it was a rendering truck. I thought that, you know, it was going to be full of dead animals, dead cattle, because we had heard gunshot, and we knew that the way that they were running and how hard they were running the cattle in that temperature, that they were killing them.
Yeah.
And that ended up being true. They were killing them. They had shot them from helicopters. They shot them from the ground. They had separated over 30 head of baby calves. Several of them had died. But we didn't know all this at the time, you know? So anyway, I thought that dump truck was just clear full of dead animals. Uh-huh. You know, and they were just cleaning up their mess and trying to hide it. And they were trying to protect that backhoe. They wouldn't let us get close to it. Anytime someone would, you know, try to get close to the backhoe, they would threaten us. They had their tasers out. There was others with fully automatic weapons. There was, they were all there. And this is going on. There's probably about 35 of them. And I think they had like five or six German Shepherd dogs too, the canine units. And then there was probably about 50 of us, 40 to 50 of the protest. So it was pretty equal group, you know. But they had their weapons, and so we're basically protesting, going back and forth, just verbally. And there's no, you know, there's no physical. No one's like has a. No one on our side has a weapon or even a rock or even making a fist or nothing like that. And so you can kind of imagine we're kind of there's a line of them and there's a line of us
going
and there's a lot of video of this. I don't know if you've seen the video.
Sure,
there's
I've
a ton
seen
of video.
Of
and anyway, so. Then from behind, an agent kind of makes a great, one of the federal agents kind of makes a great big circle and comes behind and takes my Aunt Margaret. She's 57 years old. She weighs about 110 pounds, just recently recovered from cancer, and literally takes her and picks her up and body slams her, just hip checks her and slams her right on the asphalt. And she's like, she had no idea he was even behind her. And he, you could see in the video, he actually snuck up behind her and just threw her on the ground, like slammed her on the ground. And what I mean by that, I mean it cut her pants, cut her leg, cut her hand, cut. Yeah, I'm talking about slammed her, cut, and really cut her shoulder, and I mean actually ripped her jeans and her shirt. And so that's how hard he slammed her on the ground. And she's like kind of laying there sprawled out, and she's like disoriented. She can't even believe
dazed.
Yeah, she can't even, I mean, she doesn't even know what happened to her. And when the people saw that, it just escalated the whole thing. I mean, it went from, you know, get out of here to you're leaving.
Yeah.
Right? You're leaving. We are not going to put up with this. We're not going to stand for this. And so we started kind of, you know, get out of here.
That gasoline went on that fire, and that's...
Right. And for some reason, I'm sure it's because I brought the four-wheeler down, or maybe they recognized that I was Cliven's son or whatever. I don't know. Well, anyway, they sicked their dog on me.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did that, I actually kicked at him a couple times. Well, I was defending myself.
Sure.
I wasn't going to let that dog chew on me.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I'm looking at it is that dog has no authorization to be here either.
Right.
You know, these agents,
but the way they're looking at it is it's an agent of the law.
Yeah.
And so
they
when
are.
You protest back, it becomes a
right.
resisting
so,
arrest.
So anyway, when I kicked at that dog, and I actually ended up kicking him, I'm, you know, people are like, well, don't say that on the air. This is open. The way I look at everything is, put everything out in the open, put it in the open, then the light will tell you what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did kick that dog, and he backed off and didn't want anything to do with me anymore. And then they started tasing me. They hit me with the taser.
So you got tased.
Oh, yeah, I got tased. They hit me with the taser, and it just, it takes over your body, but I didn't fall on the ground.
How miserable is that?
It's crazy.
Is it?
It really is. It your whole body goes into convulsions, and just, it really takes over your body. And some people say, oh yeah, I've been tased, like someone put a taser. No, yeah. These are, they're half inch darts, just like fish hooks. Yeah.
Oh.
And they go in you and they stick in you. And then when you tear them out, you pull flesh and everything out with it.
Oh my gosh.
So they hit you in two different spots, and then they arc across you. It's a 50,000 volt. And so your body's just, you know, going to convulsions. But I didn't fall on the ground, and I was able to rip them out. And then I went back and stood in front of them again, and then they hit me again. And again, I was
You're like,
able...
Please don't. That last time was bad enough.
It was crazy, but I felt and knew at that time that I needed to go right back where I was supposed to. And I I'll explain to you a little bit why I felt that, but I felt very strong that, well, one is I felt sustained. I felt like my legs were actually being held up so I didn't fall on the ground. It was, it was, to this day, I could distinctly feel the way it felt, that my legs felt solid and sustained on the ground, but my upper body was completely convulsing. Even your mind doesn't work right. Everything's going in slow motion, and you can't think right. But I feel and recognize that sustaining power that was in my legs. So I was able to get out, went right in front of them again. They tased me again. By this time, the other people around me were kind of getting wise to it. They started tearing them out.
Oh, my God.
And then I went back, and they hit me again. And they the other people that were with me, they tore them out, the community members, my family. They tore them out. And then they shot a fourth time, but they didn't hit me the fourth time, at least. They didn't get me. So now they've sicked the dogs on me. They sicked the dogs on me three times, and I fought with him. They've tased me three times, and we've tore him out. They sicked the dog on my sister, my younger sister, who's 4 months pregnant. They threw my aunt on the ground, and you know, they, and basically this is what's going on. And finally, and I say I felt each time that it was very important for me to go right back to where I was at. And
when you say sustained, do you mean like you felt like spiritually sustained, like this is what the Lord wants you to do?
Well,
or like
I felt physically sustained. I felt my legs felt like they were strengthened to stand
beyond your own.
And I've talked to many, 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 many people about that, and they, law enforcement mostly, and people that have been tased or been in law enforcement where they had to be tased. And every one of them say that they have never, ever seen anybody stand when they are tased like that. And it happened to me three times.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to take the credit for it. Sure. I did feel sustained. And when you say spiritually, You could take that however you want.
Sure.
But let me tell you what.
Something beyond your own, I guess, is all I was.
Yeah, let me tell you what happened after that. And this is why I believe that I was sustained and was sustained by the Lord. Because when the next level, and this was escalating to the point where the next level would have been deadly force.
Yeah.
Okay. And for
that's
more.
That's the only thing beyond this.
Yeah. And we were not going to back down.
Mm-hmm.
We were not going to. But what happened is those individuals and the people that were there.
The people from like.
The your, agents, the I'm agents, sorry. Okay. Yeah, the agents, the federal agents that were there. They were the, most of them, and I don't want to stereotype, but many of them, at least the leaders, were the individuals that respect and understand power.
Mm-hmm.
And understand basically, and that's one of the few things that they do respect and understand. And I was able to stand there and take everything that they had except lethal force, and they began to respect me. And you could see it in that video. They began to respect all of us, really. Mm-hmm. But they began to respect me, and immediately, what I after all of that happened, I stood there and I said, "Who's in charge here? Who's the person in charge here?" And no one would take responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I just started yelling, whoever's in charge here, you need to get your men out of here because this is not going to end well. And I didn't mean end well for them.
Sure.
I meant end well for us. That day, they were going to be murderers if they did not leave. And they actually started listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the demeanor in them once they're like, you know, hey, we've tased this guy. We sicked our dogs on. We've tased him. And they start to actually gather up and start to rotate and go back to their vehicles. We had to give them ground. We kind of had to turn around so they can get back to their vehicles because we had kind of worked our way up.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually started getting in their vehicles and leave. And I know without doubt today that the Lord was protecting us.
Mm-hmm.
And that He sustained me that day so that I could stand and save lives. And you might say, well, we shouldn't have been there in the first place. Well, yes, we should have been, because it's time. It was time to stand, mm-hmm. and we did. We did, and the Lord sustained us. And I know that some might think, well, that's crazy to think that, but I know that without doubt that there and what happened there was the Lord was involved, mm-hmm. and He did protect us, and that incident was what was caught on video, mm-hmm. and it went viral in just a few hours. Yeah. I mean, several million people saw it in a very, you know, short time. Mm-hmm. And then people from all over the country started coming, you know.
And that's what leads us to the big, quote unquote, standoff of Saturday.
Yeah.
Go over that a little bit for me.
So Saturday, so people started coming in and what they would do.
That's
is,
a lot of meals you had to make, by the way.
Yeah, well, it actually got to the point where there was no way we could feed everybody. And everybody was coming prepared, you know. They were prepared, you know. They weren't, at that point, they weren't asking our family to. No one ever asked our family to.
Sure, but the way that you guys are, you wanted to be hospitable to those who were helping you out.
And that's what my dad said at the very beginning. We would ask, well, what do you want us to do? And my dad would say, take care of our guests. That's what he kept saying, take care of our guests. That's all he ever asked us to do. Through this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So people are coming from all over literally the country. Reporters, I spoke with Sean Hannity like 4 or 5 times. I don't even remember every other, you know, major network that we were on. My dad's, I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, we'll get into a little bit of that in a second with some of the things that he has said. But
yeah, that would be good too. So anyway, so people started coming, and what they would do is they would come to us and say, "Hey, look, you know, I came from Texas, and I don't know why I'm here. I just felt I needed to be here. I came from North Dakota. I came from New Hampshire." One guy said, "I came from New Hampshire. I just traveled 44 hours. He goes, I felt I needed to be here. What do you want me to do?" That's everybody was feeling like they needed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings me back to, I don't know why I hesitate to.
Don't hesitate.
To say the spiritual side of this, because this was a spiritual battle that was going on. But and I shouldn't hesitate to express
that. No, and that's the thing that I think is in all this, you know, whatever the story be, whenever we as members of the church are hesitant about spiritual stuff, I'm always like, no, you know, yeah. I mean, if we feel it, and I don't know if it's a condition of society that we feel like we need to suppress spiritual things, but I mean, if you feel it,
right?
Yeah, I'm of the mind that you share it.
Well, I appreciate that, and I agree with that. I hesitate to earlier to tell you about when I came into the valley from Arizona. I was pulling a trailer and I come down into the valley and I could see across the valley that they had completely locked down the land.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt at that time like this freedom was just ripped out of me. I mean, I knew what happened to my brother. I knew that I couldn't go into those hills that I've enjoyed and loved and been on, you know, with my four-wheeler and my horses and everything my whole life. I couldn't go on there. And I could see the actual threat of them being there when I come down into that valley. And I, you know, at this time, I knew that my brother, they had got my brother, but I still hadn't talked to him and all these things were going on. And I came in and pulled into the where the protest site was, and I saw the two great big 50-foot poles, flag poles, and they had a banner, that said "Liberty to God and Country" on it, and that's what I come into.
It was part of your dad's coat that he rent from his body and then wrote on it and raised it up.
No, yeah, just teasing. That's good. But I came into the valley there, and I immediately started feeding people. You know, it was pretty late. It was a long, long day because I had to get stuff together. And so I was pretty tired. So I opened the back of the camp trailer and I got up on the bunk there, and I didn't want to like unload because I was just too tired. So I got up there and just rolled out my sleeping bag. And I could, by this time it was probably like 10 o'clock or so. And I could see the moon was up and you could see the valley and you could see some lights of things, actions and still stuff going on over there. And I felt like this it's hard to explain, but this deep, almost like this almost like this loss, almost like this, you know, like I was mourning almost for what was going on. And I began to pray. I didn't know what else to do, you know? So I just began to pray. And I continued to pray for several hours. And there was just this, I don't know, it was just so disturbing to me of what was happening. So I just kept praying. I was asking the Lord to help us and to help us know what was going to happen, know what was to do, what we were to do. And early in the morning, you know, it was 1, 2 o'clock. I don't know exactly what it was. I felt this peace that came over me. And again, I don't want to apologize for
it. Don't.
But I felt this peace that came over me. And he very clearly expressed that it was going to be okay, that we were going to get our lands back, and that he was going to use this as an example for the country to gain back their freedoms. Hmm. And that's exactly what I felt, that he would use us, that we would be okay, that we would be protected,
mm-hmm.
that he would get our land and our ranch, that our land and our ranch would be given back to us, or we would get it back,
mm-hmm.
and that he would use this as an example of what people need to do in order to stand for their freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And that this peace just came over me, just, I mean, completely filled me. And I was just so happy and so relieved. And I fell asleep and I woke up the next morning and I was just revived. I mean, at that point, it was just a matter of follow the best way you can, do what you feel like you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the Lord's battle. It's not, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, Lord takes care of the rest.
Yeah. And that's how I felt. So I went to cooking breakfast. We went to doing this. And then, you know, Monday happened, Tuesday happened, Wednesday happened. And during that time, I felt that the Lord sustained me. I felt that the Lord protected all the people, and mm-hmm. that we made a good stand. And it was a peaceful, no one got hurt. Well, I mean, I was tased.
Yeah, you were tased up.
But, I mean, no one really got hurt. And we were able to make a stand and say that we weren't going to put up with this. We weren't going to have our lands locked down. We weren't going to have, you know, our community terrorized. We weren't going to have our property taken from us and our ranches or anything or our rights. And none of this was where we made a stand. And so then people started coming and I felt that, you know, so many people came and said, hey, you know, I don't know why I'm here,
mm-hmm.
but I know why they're here, because the Spirit of the Lord was touching them, whether they're members of the church or not.
Mm-hmm.
The light of Christ was touching their hearts and they were coming. The Lord was sending them. And the Lord knew that this was the pattern in which he wants us to stand for our rights and to stand for what is right. And so people are coming, and next thing you know, we've got thousands of people that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we announced that we would have like a big rally on Saturday, and we asked everybody to come, you mm-hmm. know, everybody that could come, we asked them to come. And we had about 60 people that came with their horses.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday morning we had a rally. We had asked the governor, Governor Sandoval and the sheriff Gillespie, all through this week we'd been asking for them to stand and to not allow this to happen and to protect the people from what's going on. And they just wanted to ignore. They just wanted to, you know, to stay neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally we had got Sheriff Gillespie, who's the county sheriff, and we're part of Clark County, which is Las Vegas, and so we have to deal with all, you know. Yeah.
If there could be
that.
Two different dynamics.
Yeah, exactly.
Geez, between, you know, Vegas and this area.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we finally get him to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Or we say that we're going to have this rally, and we're basically, you know, we've been asking him this whole week to, and he's saying, you know, that he's going to stay neutral, which we found out later that he wasn't neutral, but he, that's what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And so, and to kind of give you an idea, when I say that, because you might say, well, that's easy for you to say, but when like Margaret was thrown on, my Aunt Margaret was thrown on the ground and she's cut and bleeding. Well, we called 911 and they told us that they were I don't know, commanded or whatever. They were told that they were not to get involved. Hmm. And when we were asking the local deputies who truly wanted to protect the people, asking them to stand, they were told by Sheriff Gillespie that they could not
get involved in this thing at all.
They said they would say, oh, this is an issue between the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, and Clive and Bundy. If you have a problem with that, take it up with one of them. That's exactly what they would say. And we're talking about 911 where we're calling for emergency medical assistance. So that's a kind of, we've completely felt completely alone. I mean, you know, as a people and as a family, we were left alone. We were left alone without our protectors. We were left alone without our elected officials, which is their duty to protect the people against whoever's coming to take their rights and to take their lives and liberties away. That's their job.
To protect, to serve.
It even says that. Protect and serve. Yeah. And that's, we, and I know we're kind of getting off on a tangent, but that is the true purpose of government. And that's really what we've lost. The purpose of government is not to make and enforce laws. Right? I mean, that's part of it. Don't get me wrong. Right. But the purpose of government is to protect the inalienable rights, the God-given rights that have been given to each individual person. And that is, some of those rights are life, the right to live, and the right to liberty, to live with freedom, to live free, and the right to have property and to live and to pursue happiness. That's that's what government is for. Government is not for to make more laws and more laws and more laws and then enforce those laws and enforce those laws. No, laws are supposed to be only there to protect the unalienable rights of the individual.
Yeah.
And so we've got really cross here. We're starting to, we've got to a point where we believe government is there to make laws and enforce laws. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it's about. So anyway, there's a little bit of a tangent
there
for you there. So anyway, getting back on task.
Yeah, so we're at thousands of people. It's Saturday. And then they go, here we go. It's go time.
Well, what happened was, is the county sheriff came. We finally got enough, you know, and you know, attention that he came. And he gets up in front of everybody. And he says that, you know, I've talked with the BLM and they've decided to not gather the cattle anymore. They've already gathered 400 head almost.
Two-thirds, almost.
But the people are cheering, you know, like, well, we're happy, right? Okay, they're going to stop gathering the cattle. Then he said, and I've talked to them and they're going to leave the area, okay, in time. That's what he said.
Okay. They'll leave the area in time. Okay.
Right. And the undersheriff, I was actually on the stage. The undersheriff leans over to me. It's going to take them about, you know, 10 days or so to leave. Well, the people, basically, I mean, there was several things that went on. We at the beginning of it, we said the Pledge of Allegiance. We said the prayer. Mm-hmm. I said a prayer. And then we had up on the hill, the horsemen came up on the hill and they were carrying flags. And we had one of the horses didn't have a rider. He represented those that had fallen. Mm. And then we run the American flag to the top of the hill and posted it. And it was a very patriotic moment for everybody. And it was very meaningful. And I was glad to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Then the sheriff, you know, did all that he said. And then the people were like, well, wait a minute. What are they going to do with the cattle?
Yeah, that was my thought. Okay. They've already got 400. So what do they do with it?
They said that they were going to keep them. Mm. And they also said that, you know, they were going to basically stay long enough, as long as they wanted to, until they left. Mm-hmm. Well, the people at this point, they had been abused to a point where, and, you know, knowing what happened and knowing the history of the federal government and especially the Bureau of Land Management, they just simply didn't believe. One is they said that the cattle needed to be returned, and they didn't believe that the Bureau of Land Management was going to leave. They thought that, oh, the sheriff was going to just say what he said, and because they said it, and then they were all going to disperse, And then
you'd still be stuck in the same situation.
Then they would just start gathering cattle again.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, the people decided to go just rally and go up there and protest against them and demand that they get the cattle back. And I noticed that, which I can understand. I noticed that you said that, hundreds of armed men went up there. That is not what happened. Okay. I know the media wants to make you think that. Mm-hmm. But there was militia that came in, and I'm glad that they were there because that is the reason why we have our Second Amendment rights, mm-hmm. is to protect the rights of the people. And what I mean by that, and again, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but as long as you allow me
to do that.
Okay?
Let's do it.
What I mean by that is if the federal government,
it was a way for them to be taken seriously, really.
That's right. It held them accountable, mm-hmm. like meaning that, I mean, this wasn't just a bunch of unarmed people that are, you know, this is armed people. This is Americans. We're armed for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that means something. You know, if you look at what's going on down to the borders, and I don't know how aware you are what's
going
on.
Sure, everything with the immigration.
Well, why are those people coming up here? Do you know why?
I mean,
generally.
I think in general, people are coming here because the life is better for them here.
Right. Well, and where they're from, their families are threatened. Their daughters are threatened.
Drugs or prostitution.
It's
poverty.
It's chaos and mayhem down there. And part of that is because those people are not under a government that either will protect them, and they haven't been given the ability to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's a little bit of an understanding why it's so important. Because down there, what's happened is it's very hard to tell who's the government and who are the thugs, mm-hmm. right? Well, and the people are so weak, if you will, and I mean that as with empathy. I say that with empathy. Mm-hmm. But the people are weak in the way that they don't have arms, they don't have any way to actually protect their rights. Mm-hmm. And they've been given the same rights as Americans.
Sure.
What I mean, you know, those unalienable rights are theirs just as much as ours. We have the same creator.
Yeah.
And they're not able to protect them. Well, in America, we the individual person is given by law, by the supreme law of the land, is given power or ability to protect their unalienable rights if no one else will protect them. And that's what happened here at the ranch, at the Bundy Ranch. The federal government turned their sights on the people. Mm-hmm. The state government just turned a deaf ear to the people and wouldn't protect them, which is their duty. The county government did the same thing, which is their duty. And so it was left to the people to do it themselves. And that's what the people did. And that is their right and their duty to do that, by the way. Mm-hmm. When we elect a county sheriff, we elect officials on every level, and their duty is to protect the rights. But when they don't do it, it is the right of the individual to protect his rights, his unalienable rights, those rights that God has given. And let's not think otherwise. I mean, I want to be extremely clear about that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. You know, you could save a few $100 building a computer all by yourself. So why buy a computer from PC Laptops? Because at PC Laptops, we perfectly match all the components in each hand-built desktop computer we make. An example is this, the NVIDIA 780 Ti with 2,880 CUDA cores and a 928 MHz boost clock. We combine that with an Intel 4960X 6-core processor with 12 hyperthreads. At PC Laptops, we take the guesswork out of matching components so you get optimal performance and reliability backed by a lifetime parts and labor warranty. That means if a part fails, it's covered forever locally, so you don't need to mail it to Chumbawamba. You get real human beings that will take care of you in person. So please visit us at any of our 8 locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, we love you!
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
And so, basically, the people went up there and peacefully went up there. There was the presence of... They didn't have weapons, but... 90, I know, when you say statistics, that means you're just throwing out a number, but a large majority of the people were unarmed.
In fact, weapons as part
there was, yeah, absolutely. There was. And there was, and then, but most of the militia people, well, all of them were asked to stay at the protest site.
Mm-hmm.
And that if there was an issue, that they would be called up, okay, or they would be informed, whatever, not called up.
Okay? Yeah.
So most of them actually stayed at the protest site. But there were some of those that, because it wasn't like an organized military. There was some of those that
came.
Like,
no, I'm going. I'm bringing this weapon. I'm going up there with them. Yeah.
And so, but the majority of the people were there. And basically, we got there, and there was hundreds. You know, all those agents had weapons, and they were on their full tack gear with their helmets and their body armor, and they looked like a military unit, and they were fully weaponized. And when we got there, they were in stacking position, and basically we went down underneath I-15 there, and through all the commotion, I-15 got shut down. So it's getting backed up. I heard it got backed up like 80 miles both ways.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. For 4 hours it was backed up.
Oh, my gosh.
And FAA had closed the area for any, you know, any flights. You know, they had
airspace
was closed. Yes, was closed. So none of the media could really get video or anything of it either, except those that were actually down there. Mm-hmm. So anyway, make a very long story short. We get down there, we get underneath the bridge, and we're literally faced with all these guns, and they have their bullhorn threatening us that if we do not disperse, that they're going to open fire, that if we make any further advancements, that they will open fire. That's what they were saying in their bullhorn. And the people were frightened, and they were fearful for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, at one point, a few of them decided that they were too scared, that they weren't going to do this. And they started to turn around, and I stopped them, and I said, hey, look, if we leave now, we'll never get these lands back. Because the pattern of this is that once they take control of the land, then they always continue to highly patrol it. They don't let people out on it. You know, they destroy all the things that are related to human usage, which they had already started to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just quickly explained that to them, and they felt that it was right and that they needed to stand.
Mm-hmm.
But we were afraid. We were all afraid. I mean, we'd never faced anything like that before. I mean, we're looking literally down the barrels at hundreds of guns, and they're fully automatic weapons. And a lot of these people, you could tell they had been in war, and they, you know, they knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're facing them, and they're probably about a football field away, just to kind of give you a perspective of how far away they are. And they have this bullhorn in there. And so we knelt down, and we began to pray and ask the Lord to give us courage to do what we could do. And we asked him to protect us and asked him that we could do this peacefully. And that's what we did. And we stood up, and we felt sustained at this time.
Hmm.
And so we moved forward a little bit, and we got there, and we kind of got underneath the underpass, and they're over on the other side. So you kind of were in between the freeways, and there's two huge underpasses or overpasses that are above us, I guess. And we look up, and the freeways are just lined with people looking down. And so everybody who was down underneath started calling, saying, come down, you know, join us.
Sure.
And so people started just piling over the sides of the freeway and coming, sliding down the embankment there and just joining us till there was, you know, several hundred people that were down there. And then during that time, the horses that were down the protest site, they came up, and they had a very similar spiritual experience as we did, that, you know, the people that they knew that what was happening might cost them their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they got off their horses and they knelt down and prayed and asked the Lord to protect them. And you know, in the wash there, we didn't see that happen, but I know that they did that. And they got it. And then it was, you know, men and women alike. And they got back on their horses and they came up there, and we're still there. You know, we're pretty couple hundred strong, but we're still very frightened.
Mm-hmm.
And those horses came in, come right through us and stood right in line there. And they just gave us that strength and that power. And we just felt, and like I said, I want to reemphasize that there was very, very few weapons there. We knew we didn't need those weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But they were there as a reminder to them to not open fire, because if they did, that they would be accountable for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the militia was, I mean, believe me, if there would have been an open fire, we'd be in a Revolutionary War right today, because mm-hmm. there would have been hundreds of lives that were lost on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But the Lord didn't want it that way. He wanted it to be peaceful. And we understood that. My family and many, 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 many other people understood that. That the Lord wanted it and intended this to be peaceful. And so when anybody got out of line and tried to, you know, act out, my family and other community members would put it out like that.
Yeah.
Hey, that's not what we're here for. Even down there, swearing or acting, you know, that way, all of us would be like, that's not what we're here for. We understood. And there was a very, tangible peace that was over us.
Hmm.
And we felt that it was very real. And so we just began to walk forward closer and closer and closer.
They're like, really, we mean it. Don't walk any closer.
And they're still, you know, threatening us. We keep moving forward. They're threatening us. And, you know, there's still thousands of people watching us from the freeways. It's all backed up.
Hmm.
And we get about 30 yards from the fence, because they had a fence barrier there, and a reporter had gone up, and his name is Michael something Lynch, I think, Michael Lynch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes up, and actually they threatened him too. He put out his camera and everything, and he goes up and says, I'm a reporter, you know, I'm from New York. And he goes up there and he starts talking to the head agent for the BLM, the man in charge of this operation, and his name was Dan Love. And he starts talking to him, and then he's trying to wave me and some of my brothers mm-hmm. up. And basically what we found out later is they wanted us, all my brothers, to go over the fence and go negotiate with them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would just be the stupidest thing in the world to do. But at that point, again, I mean, we felt very directed at that point, and I felt, and I know my brothers felt similar, but I can only speak for myself, but I felt at that time that this wasn't just about me and us and our family mm-hmm. and the ranch. This was now the people were here, and that it wasn't right for us to go up there and try to negotiate something without the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that we had no right to go do that. This was the people. We needed to go, you know. And so we just started moving forward.
Hmm.
And there were some things that happened, like one individual further back, he was carrying an American flag, and he had just started almost like running towards them. And I actually run up behind him, and I said, hey, stop, stop, stop. And he turns around, and in this Russian accent, he's this little Russian guy, he says, I'm from Russia, and he says, I've seen this before. And he says, I will not live this way. I'd rather die.
Hmm.
That's what he said. And I said, well, don't do that today. And I put my arm around him. I said, come join us. Let's do this together. And so then we move up, and we ended up just moving until we got completely right to the fence, everybody to the fence. And so, I mean, you got several hundred people on one side of the fence, and they're about 50, you know, probably 10 yards off the fence, and they're fully armed. In full stacking position, meaning that they're stacked in a way. They got in stacking position when we started moving forwards, and that means that they can fire without hitting each other. Mm-hmm. That's what stacking position is, and that's what they were in. I didn't know that until I learned a lot of things during this, right?
I was going to say, good for you knowing this. Jeez.
Yeah, I really learned a lot. Anyway.
Some stuff you probably never wanted.
Yeah, so at the gate, there was a lot of things that happened. For example, one of my brothers had a dream, and he had a dream on...
Which brother is this?
Ryan.
Okay.
He had a dream on, I think it was Tuesday, and the Lord showed him where he needed to be and where other people needed to be during this time, and actually showed him how it was going to happen and where it was going to happen and all of that. That was going to... He told us this before. So it wasn't like, oh, all of a sudden now later on tells us.
Sure,
no,
it was a dream.
No, he completely... Yeah. In fact, he said it more than one time. He brought us together and says, this is what's going to happen. We just didn't know when it was going to happen exactly. We knew it was going to happen quickly. He even felt that it was going to happen fairly quickly. Because Saturday was exactly 7 days from the time they started gathering the cattle. So they were supposed to be there for 7 weeks, and here we are 7 days into the gathering. And we're already, the people have already gathered, and we're going. Anyway, I say that because there was a lot of things that were happening. He was up on top trying to work with the county sheriffs and get him to do their duty, to make them stand down. My other brothers, one brother, and other people too. It wasn't just our family. We're in places that we were supposed to be in order to make this happen and for this to happen peacefully. And that's, I can't testify enough that the Lord orchestrated this whole thing. And why did he do it this way? Because it is an example of how we're supposed to peacefully take back our freedoms. And that, you know, when something is wrong, we stand together and we stand united with the balance of the Second Amendment if we have to. But we do it peacefully, and we together get back these rights and the protection of these rights. We get them back. And so... Anyway, here we are. A lot of things are going on. I'm talking to the head of the BLM operations, and he's basically trying to manipulate the situation and telling us that we need to back down, we need to disperse, and all these things. And I'm saying, and the people there with me right there, they can all hear what's going on. I'm saying, no way. You know, we're here. We're here to do what we've come to do, and that you need to leave. You're the one in the wrong. You're the one that has abused the people. You're the one that has come down here without constitutional authority, and these things. That's just going back and forth, and it's getting pretty hot, if you will, and getting pretty tense, and the people literally are basically boiling, and they're ready to fire on us, and that's the way it is. And up on top, my brothers, basically there was some militia people up there that have been in the military. And when we say militia, I want you to understand that the militia is the people's army. You know, what is the Constitution teach us about the militia? That is, the Second Amendment said it is necessary in order to maintain a free state to have a well-regulated militia. So, I mean, we know, but basically my point is the militia is the people's army.
Right.
It's when all other governments have failed, the militia stands and protects the people and the people's rights.
So he's up on the hill.
There's two militia guys that are with him, and they're looking down, and they could see what's happening down there, and they could see the federal agents getting in stacking position. And he's like, he understands what that stacking position means. And he's begins to say, you know, things, you know, it's getting hot down there. It's getting hot. Hey, they're getting in stacking position. There's only one reason why they're doing that. And he's like narrating kind of what's happening. And so my brother began to say, who's in charge? You know, who's in charge of the sheriff's department there? And he finally gets someone's in charge, and he just says, you've got to do something. You have to make sure that they stand down. You know, the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, they have to stand down.
Right.
And finally, after literally all of this is going on, finally, the sheriff's department, or at least that deputy, finally demanded that the BLM up on top, because there was some up on top guarding the road and the fence to get in, demanded that they stand down. They took sheriff deputy vehicles, county vehicles, you know, county sheriff vehicles, excuse me, down, and they came behind the agents. And as they came through, they demanded that the agents stand down. They came all the way to the fence. And so now we've got the head of the BLM operations, and we have Deputy Tom Roberts is who it was. And when I saw him, I was so relieved. to see him. He came down. He came straight to me, and he said, "Ammon, I'm here to help. What do you want me to do?"
Is he a Mormon guy?
I don't know, but I would like to believe that.
Yeah.
I would not doubt it, though. I really felt... I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Curious. I really don't know that. But that would be... no. Although several of the local deputies were... Mm-hmm. Well, all of them were the local deputies. And anyway... They,
so he comes down.
So
and
he
says,
comes
what
down
can I do?
And he says, "I'm here to help." And I said, "Hey, well, actually, at that point, I stopped and I pointed to Dan Love, who was the head of the BLM operations, and I said, 'This man does not have authority to be here.' And then I pointed to Sheriff Deputy Tom Roberts, and I said, 'This man has authority to be here.' And short of doing what he that what we came to do, mm-hmm. we will." Do what he asked us to do. And he asked us to back off about 10 yards. So we did. And then he turned around and he demanded that the BLM stand down and back off. And they did. And then the people weren't like, they were still too close and they were still there. So the people were like, still like not very happy about
sure.
them being there and their presence. And so they, I communicated that to Tom Roberts and he made him completely stand down. Meanwhile, my brother was up on top and he was negotiating basically them to leave, and they were basically given an hour to get out of the area and demanded that they give the cattle back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the people wanted, and that's what the terms that were given, an hour. And so the agents got in there and they literally packed up as fast as they could for an hour and they left. And when they left, 107 vehicles left out of that compound there. And then we went up in there with the horses and we got the cattle and we drove them back through the underpass there. And there was, you know, hundreds of people lined up on the overpass as the cattle went through. Mm. And as soon as they went through, the people started cheering and hugging and crying. And it was a very neat moment to be part of. And anyway, there's just so much detail.
I could go into it.
Yeah, we could talk for hours. But basically, that's what happened. And that's in a nutshell. And when I went up into the compound, they had literally left and dropped everything. I mean, they, you know. And the point that I would like to point out, and then, you know, you could, whatever you want to ask me.
Okay.
But the point I want to point out is, one, is it was done peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Two, is it was an exhibit of the people's power, that the people truly do have the power when they unite together, and that all the power that government's been given, all the power that government has on every level comes from the people, comes from the individual, and those rights have been given to them by our Creator. And things have been messed up a little bit. You know, somehow the federal government has kind of gotten back to what we tried to get away from in the, you know, during the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
But we can write this without blood, and I truly believe that we can actually write this and get these things better and pass this wonderful heritage onto our children that we've enjoyed and that our forefathers enjoyed for several generations. And this was an example of how to do things peacefully. And I know that the media hasn't casted it that way, but that's exactly what it is. And how easy would it have been for one person to fire on either side?
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Okay, so now let's ask some questions here. where does it stand now? Because it's not resolved.
Good point, or good question.
So where is it, in court? Is it?
No, we haven't heard from them in one iota. We haven't heard. We
so
haven't
they,
heard from
they
them.
Left town and
we haven't seen any agent. We haven't nothing from them. Not one iota have we heard from them.
From BLM, any federal agents?
Nothing.
Any?
The only we've heard from is the sheriff Gillespie,
mm-hmm.
and he's pointed fingers both ways. He's kind of tried to maintain that neutral position,
mm-hmm.
but that's it. But as far
There's
as
no
the,
BLM folks on the land. No, nothing.
They threatened at first. You know, Harry Reid threatened at first to that this wasn't
brother
over.
Reed, technically,
yeah, brother Reid. Yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. Have you interviewed him yet?
I have not yet. But
oh man, you ought to get him.
I would love to.
And invite me too. That's good.
I don't know that I would love that.
No,
this could be resolved peacefully.
Yes. Anyway, it would be interesting. I would definitely listen to that.
I would definitely entertain that that idea for a conversation with him.
But, you know, he called us domestic terrorists and he threatened that it wasn't over. And he actually said that his comments were that we are a people, we are not a country of men and women. This is his words exactly. We are not a country of men made of men and women. We are a country made of laws. Mm. And that was, to me, I just could not believe that he would say that. But that was, you know... Look it up. Don't take my word for it. That's what he said. That
I mean, I guess for all intents and purposes, then, I mean, you got to feel at least pretty good about that. That at least at this point, there's not any sort of being hassled.
But yeah, we do.
But you know that it's not over.
No, it's not over. But we're ranching, and the people are enjoying the land. They're out hiking and camping on it, four-wheeling, hunting, and you know where we know without doubt that it wouldn't be that way if we hadn't made it that stand. I mean, it's just the pattern of the way they come and take over land. It would be highly policed right now. I mean, highly, highly policed if we hadn't done what we did.
Okay, so your dad, some comments, pretty racist.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so tell me what you know, or not what you know.
I think the famous one is, and I'm not going to get it exactly right, but that black people would be better off in slavery. And I understand where that can be misconstrued, his comments.
Right.
But let's talk about it. So essentially the comment was that black people would be better in slavery than they are now. Pretty poor choice. I mean, I get his sentiment, at least his post-explained sentiment, but a pretty racially charged kind of comment.
So I'm glad.
So I guess my question is not necessarily, in my heart of hearts, I hope that he is not a racist person. I don't know. I think maybe only he would know if he is a racist person.
Uh-huh.
But have you ever known him to be any sort of racist?
My dad does not have a racist bone in his body. And just to clarify a little bit, I'm glad you brought this up, by the way. I'm not afraid of this topic at all. But one is he asked the question. The question wasn't, see, the media changed it. The question was, are they better off picking or being in slavery than, under the government welfare system? Basically, that's what he asked. Are they better off?
Mm-hmm.
And he said they are better off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to clarify that. He asked a question. And again, I invite anybody to go and find out. That's what he said. But from somebody on the inside who...
Yeah, you don't get more inside than know about your family and your dad.
Let me just real quickly tell you what was going on. And again, my dad's not a public speaker. I mean, he's a rancher. He spent his whole life...
In fact, most
life,
ranchers I know aren't speakers at all.
No,
they're just
they
like,
say
hey.
It the way it is. And my dad is no different. I mean, he didn't make this stand because he's a hypocrite or a politician or whatever. He makes a stand because he believes that he is right, and that he needs to make this stand, and that's the right thing, and it's the best for the people. That's why he made this stand. And so, anyway, so from the very I talked to you, I said a little bit about how we did our best to try to follow what the Lord guided us to do, and to follow the inspiration of the Lord. And from the very beginning, and I'm talking about from like the very beginning of this, meaning of this stand, my dad continually kept saying, I feel that the minorities need to be part of this. You know, and he kept saying, where is the black community?
Where is the
Hispanic community?
In his view, it's not, as you've said, it's not just about the cattle. We're talking about the freedom. So I get
But he kept
inclusion.
Feeling that they needed to be part of part of this. Mm-hmm. And so that when he said those things, what happened, and they totally took him out of context, but he was trying to reach out to the Hispanic, because he said a lot of wonderful things about the blacks and the Hispanic communities. But of course, they're not going
to. No, those things aren't going to make it.
But he was trying to reach out to them and say, you know, come and join this. This is as much important to you as it is to us. You know, you come and join us. Come and be part of this. And he said it was already after Saturday. It was already after it was all over. But there was still hundreds of people coming to the ranch, because hundreds of people had started to come from all over the country. And a lot of them decided just to keep coming.
Yeah.
And so, and we were still having, you know, press conferences and everything every, you know, day. There were still hundreds of people there. And so he was basically calling on the black and the Hispanic communities to come and to be part of this. And because he felt it, and he just didn't articulate it very well. Yeah. I mean, you know, but he is a rancher that's spent most of his life. And, you know, he used the word Negro, but you know what? It was funny because, and I'll say this on the air, it doesn't really matter, because after the whole media and they made a, you know, big old deal, and they tried to hang him. And I will point out that the only people that were upset about what he said was the white media. If you look and you look and you see the black community and the black leaders understood what he said and agreed to it. It was only the white media that had their own agenda that seemed to, that actually were the one that was saying, oh, he's racist and all of that. But really look into it, find out what he said, and also find out who supported him and who was the ones really against him. Okay. So anyway, I said I had an inside view after this is all over and he's getting beat up about, you know, saying those things. I said, Dad, you can't really use, actually it was really before it got really, really pretty bad, you know? And I said, Dad, you can't really use the term Negro.
Yeah, apes, Dad.
Exactly. He goes, well, what'd I call him? I mean, he was honestly and truthfully just, that's what we called him when we grew up. And some of them, you know, if you find out, some of them prefer to be called a Negro rather than a black man.
Yeah, or an African American.
Or an African American. Yeah.
Africa and
yeah, there's a whole. So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, as inside as it gets, he thought he was being respectful to him by calling him a Negro.
But you think genuinely? Because I think people would say he can't be so secluded that the idea of.
Well, if you go to that generation and find out what they called him. They called them Negroes.
I'm just offering okay.
I appreciate that. I'm just saying that you don't have to look very far to find out that at one time they preferred to be called a Negro, and it was during that, or at least that's what they were called. And right or wrong, I mean, the black community, I mean, their rights have been infringed upon as much as any other group of people.
Some would argue more so.
Well, yeah. No, I would side with that more so. Okay, I'm glad you pointed that out. More so, even more so than the Mormon people.
Right.
You know, there is some comparison there, but they understand. They should and they can understand freedom and protecting those rights better than anybody. And then you got a lot of the immigrants and people that have come from, you know, one or two generations ago came from other countries. Well, they can understand that too. I mean, because their rights have been infringed upon. And I don't know if that's why my dad felt they needed to be part of this or whatever it was, but he did honestly, truly, and still today, that honestly, see, he doesn't apologize for what he said, because what he said was right. When you look at what he said, you'll find that it has nothing to do with racism, that nothing he said was racist at all. Just look at it. He just didn't articulate it well. He didn't use the right terms in the political phrases, you know, the political correct phrases. But what he was saying is that those people need their freedoms. They need to be able to enjoy the American dream just like everybody else. And they need to be part of this. And we want them to be part of this. And he was reaching out to them. And it really doesn't matter what anybody else says. I know that that is the fact. I know, you know, I had multiple conversations with him before and after he made those comments. And I was standing right beside him when he made those comments. And you know, at the time I thought,
oh, Dad, well, you shouldn't have said.
Well, I didn't, because I'm not going to, if someone feels that to say something's important, who, what right do we have to say that you can't say that?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I admit I was a little bit like, oh, I hope someone doesn't take that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, of course, but that's how I felt. But yeah, I knew and I felt how powerful what he was saying was true.
A bigger, like, a bigger thing. Than
yeah, that. They just, and of course they take it and they do what they want with it and they spread it out how they want. But what he said was right, and what he was doing was trying to reach out. And he does have a great respect for individual freedoms and individual rights. And he is no respecter of race or people or, you know, gender or nothing. He is, you know, he's not a perfect man. Don't get me wrong. He, you know, like all of us has our own ways, but, and he was built a stubborn person, believe me. Okay. I mean, he was my father, but I believe that he was built to do what he's doing right now, and that he is doing a great justice for the American people, and that it's very difficult on him and on my mother to do this. He's a 68-year-old man, but he is supposed to do what he's doing, and that this is an example of what we need to do with many other the other rights that are being violated, and what we need to do to get the Constitution back on its feet and preparing for the second coming of the Lord. I mean, I do honestly believe that.
Let me ask you, I just have a couple more questions, then we'll get you out of here.
Okay.
How is it going to church after all this? Because to me, it's like, you know, if I'm just a member of whatever, the Bunkerville First Ward, and, you know, maybe I have some feelings about it, but maybe I don't. Like, you guys went to church during all this.
We did.
And so, like, to me, it'd be like, so do we talk about this? You know, because as Mormon people go, you know, we're typically taught, and some would listening to this would go, no, you're not. But to leave, you know, any sort of kind of politics or any of those things kind of out of the church, but just there to worship the Lord. And I would think that that would, first of all, be really difficult, especially given the nature of everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, just kind of this, oh, hey, Bundys, what's going on? How are you guys? Were you going to teach the lesson today? Because I think you've been busy. Should I, should I go ahead and take care of that for you?
Well, there was a lot of that. But you have to remember, in Bunkerville and local community, everybody was involved pretty much. You know, so it wasn't. I mean, you know,
wasn't a lot of people separated from the situation.
Well, I mean, there was. You know, there was some separation, but most of it was, you know, was a good. At least people were involved. You know, and people knew and understand.
Were there any sort of arguments in church? People saying, hey, you guys, you really shouldn't be doing this. Was it anything like that occur?
A little bit, like not openly though. You know, there was a few individuals that were like, I think the most common thing was, well, hey, we believe in obeying the law of the land.
Right.
You know, that's the most common thing, and that, you know, there was a judgment that was placed against you guys, and then that you were in contempt of court because you stood against
that judgment. Obeying the law of the land.
That's not obeying the law of the land. And that kind of seems to be where it comes together, you know, or comes to a point, if you will. And I actually serve in a bishopric. So when I went back, and there was, I mean, the majority by far the people supported and understood and felt that it was important. But there were individuals that, you know, questioned whether they wanted to sustain me or not. And most of them just didn't understand. And most of them, I should say. And I what I mean by that, I'm talking about, we're talking about a far majority came in support and showed their love and concern for me and my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a very small handful of them actually pretty strongly stood against me and against what we did and anything else that happened there. And so,
and that's your ward back in Arizona.
Back in Arizona. Yeah. But the same thing happened in Bunkerville and, you know, in most
I think
areas.
Anywhere you're yeah. always going to, there will always be people that will think the opposite, yeah. regardless of what your
the,
thought is.
The interesting thing is how active they were in the actually opposing like, what we did, you know, Facebook and, you know, wanting to meet with the bishop and that kind of, and the stake presidency and that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, one is there is always room for understanding more, and mm-hmm. that means that there's always going to be misunderstanding too,
right?
Until we see eye to eye and see things as each other will see, which we know is going to happen in the next life. Until I can actually see and understand what you see and understand, we're always going to not fully understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect of it, and we have to allow for that. That we have to be open to that. You know, but when you come to that, obeying the law of the land, it, another interesting thing is during this time, I needed to renew my temple recommend.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt it was very important for me to be able to talk to the stake president, be able to talk to my bishop and ask. And, one thing I noticed in there is one of the temple recommend questions, or there is not a temple recommend question in there that, ask if you obey the law of the land.
Right. Honest in your fellow man, with your fellow man is probably the
pretty close to it, yeah. And, but, you know, and so for some reason in my mind, I thought that it was. And I mean, I've done several temple recommend interviews a lot because I've been in bishopric court mm-hmm. for some time now. And, but I was very comfortable with that question if it was asked me, mm-hmm. you know, what do you. How do you say you obey the law of the land when all of this went on?
Mm-hmm.
And because if you understand what the Lord declares as the law of the land, it is the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. And he says anything more or less than this is not of me. He clearly even states that it is the Constitution of the United States that is the law of the land. And when you look at what happened, they were the violators of the Constitution of the United States. And that even though that they have placed these codes and these laws that are unconstitutional, and even that we have been abiding by for many, 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 many years,
mm-hmm.
that those are the things that are more or less, those are the things that do not coincide with the Constitution of the United States. And so I just encourage people to go and study the issue, study what it is to what is the law of the land.
Hmm.
What does the Lord designate as the law of the land?
Kind of a side question that I'd have is that is where, I mean, where would people go to study that specific point?
Doctrine and Covenants section 98 and 101.
Okay.
Both of those, talk about the Constitution. They also talk about the pattern in which we are justified to defend ourselves mm-hmm. and to actually take, you know, take in up arms, which we were not to that point. I want to point that out. We didn't do that. But there is a pattern there. And there's also a pattern of what we're to do. And it, you know, I want to shout out that we have followed that. We have petitioned to our elected officials and our leaders for many, 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 many years. This has been going on for many, many years. And we have been assaulted multiple times. And but Doctrine Covenant Section 98 is where it talks about that, and 101 are the sections that discuss that.
Okay.
And you know, there's many websites. I mean, my greatest support was LDS.org. I mean, I was just every time I went to the church website, mm-hmm. I found something that was uplifting and encouraging and felt that it was written just for me at the time, you know, and I know it wasn't, but, you know, things like on April 5th was the priesthood session of General Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, April 5th was the first day that the BLM began to gather cattle.
Hmm.
and President Monson. And I, you know, I take this as you want, but sure. To me, it felt very directive to me. And President Monson, in his priesthood conference talk, asked us to stand up and stand for what was right and take courage multiple times. He said that throughout his conference talk, that to take courage, to stand up. And he also said some of the consequences of doing that you will lose social status, that, you know, there's many consequences. And all of those have happened to us and our family. And yet it's been a great blessing because we stood and we are standing for what we know is right. And we've taken courage, and we still may need to take much more courage than we have. You know, our individual and religious freedoms are under attack, and we can't be oblivious to that. We can't think that we live in the last days and yet these things are not going to happen to us.
We ask everyone who comes to the Cultural Hall three questions, so I'll ask those questions of you right now. I think I know the first one. You said we ask everyone what their calling is right now. Are you still in the bishopric?
Yes.
Did they ever, you know, as of recent kind of LDS media, they've been talking a lot about church disciplinary action or excommunication. Was that ever anything that was talked about with you?
No, not with me. The stake president, once I was able to communicate with him and share the testimony and share how my experiences and what I understood, the Lord's involvement in that, it was one of the most spiritual moments that I've ever had in my life. And even though he's very, very good at being able to take his position as a church leader, mm-hmm. you know, and be able to do what he needs to do there, I feel very relieved that he understands and has felt some of the things that I have felt. So
was there some thought at any point that there might be something like that from him or from the bishop or anything, or was it just a non-issue?
I hesitate to say, but I know that there was not from him, but there was some question from some of the other, you know, leaders, another leader and individual, that basically, you know, is he going to be released? Is those type of stuff.
Okay.
And state president very quickly, from what I understand,
said no, sorry.
Of course not.
The second question that we ask is if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make up one, what would you pick?
I would pick 11-year-old scout leader.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's the thing?
I've been the 11-year-old scout leader, and I think it's the best calling in the church.
I think a lot of people are yelling at their radio or however they listen to this right now and saying, you're crazy, but yeah. The 11-year-old scout leader.
You know, they're just old enough to like listen, and they want to be part of it and all of that. And if you could just funnel that intense energy that they have, man, it is so fun to have those boys and to see them progress and to enjoy, and the opportunities that you have to like influence their life is just tremendous. And I love that calling. That, you know, Deacon's Quorum Assistant is pretty close to the same, and I haven't been the Deacon's Quorum Assistant, but I've been a young men's president, and anyway, those callings I really, really enjoy and love working with the youth and spending time with them and building that really trusting relationship that, you know, where they influence you and help you, and you can influence them and help them. And something that I've, you know, cherished, those relationships since I've built them, you know, I've mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to see young men, get married in the temple. Many of them go on missions and get married in the temple. And every time they call me and they, you know, they say, hey, I'm going on a mission. And when they come back, they call me, hey, I'm back. And, you know, we get together and we have dinner, or we, you know, talk for a little bit. And then they go to the temple, and you just to see that is just, it's extremely, humbling and gratifying to be part of that. And so anyway, 11-year-old scout leader.
The final question that I have is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
It is without doubt the relationship that I have with my Savior. And it has been built tremendously over this period. I truly know that he lives and that he, excuse me, that he loves each of us. And I also know that he wants us to be free and to be happy. And I know that he lives. There's no doubt in my mind that he lives. I don't even want to say that. He lives and he loves us. And he is very real. And he loves Mormons and non-Mormons alike. And he respects them. And he knows that there's great blessings to be found inside the church. Great, great blessings. But not everybody will have that opportunity. And not everybody has. And he loves all individuals. So without doubt, my favorite part is the relationship that I have with the Lord.
I guess my final question, I know I said just three and that was it, is I don't know what I need to do to get myself invited down to dinner on the Cliven Bundy Ranch, but let me know. I'll do whatever it takes.
Uh-huh.
The search, I'll bring my casserole, whatever it takes. I can do dessert. I make a mean chocolate chip cookie.
All right.
But,
that sounds good.
We'll have to talk about that. Because I know that some people have been allowed to go down, and I would love the opportunity to meet your dad and to be able to see where all this stuff that we've talked about has taken place.
Well, I wish I didn't live so far away, because I would just, whenever you wanted to go, take you down there and show you, because it is very, very interesting. And to me, and it's just a personal thing, but I feel that there's some sacred ground down there now. And mm-hmm. And that's a personal thing. I mean, I'm not saying let's go make a, you know, sacred grove out of or anything like that. But there was some very, very important things and some very neat, wonderful things that happened on some of that ground and property. And maybe it's just because I feel those memories and emotions flowing back to me when I go there. But I would love to take you down there.
Cool.
I'd love to sit around with real people. You know, it's a ranch.
Just let me know when you're going.
Okay.
And I'll meet you down there.
Okay, that sounds good.
Doesn't take too long.
No, not at all.
Well, let's end this thing. We'll do it how we normally do. We hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.